It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. There are hundreds of African-American-owned businesses in Western Pennsylvania employing thousands and thousands of workers. What are the opportunities for these business owners to prosper in our region? Doris Carson Williams is president and CEO of the African American Chamber of Commerce of Western Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Confluence.
Well, thank you.
And to get things straight right away, it's not solely African American owned businesses in your organization.
That's correct. I'd say about 78% of our members are African American. The rest are white, Hispanic, Latino, and Indian, because our philosophy is small business owners work for green money, they hire from their neighborhoods, and it all helps to support our local economy.
All right, so in December you had an annual event. Was it a look back? Was it a look forward? And if it was a look back, what were some of the highlights of 18?
It's an annual business luncheon where we bring in the president or chairman of a major corporation to talk about what we need to do to improve where we are to move our region forward. We did discuss some of our highlights for the past year, which included a junior chamber of commerce that we set up with Community College of Allegheny County to teach business and entrepreneurial students why, when they get out of school, start their own business, they need to join a chamber.
Okay. So does the chamber set goals for a particular year? So how do you develop action plans to accomplish those goals?
Well, we do strategic planning, so we have a strategic plan, but we also do a survey on our members, of our members. So we asked our members, what are the things you're most interested in seeing us do? What kind of programming would you like to have? We hold a members mixer every month where our members, we move it around the region because we're Cambria County up to Erie, over to the Ohio border and down to West Virginia. So we try and move it around, predominantly Allegheny, Westmoreland, Greene, and Washington County area. Right. But we move it around so that for 2 hours, small business owners and professionals exchange business cards, and they talk about their businesses with each other.
Okay. Pennsylvania does not usually score well when it comes to rankings of its business climate. I would like to ask you, what is your assessment overall of the business climate in Pennsylvania or in our region, and particularly for small businesses and even small businesses owned by African Americans?
There are many challenges for small business owners, but you have to find the right niche for yourself. Depending on the industry that you're in, some businesses do very well. But we have a number of small businesses, I'm sorry to say, that do more business outside of our region than in our region. We're trying to change that. We've been working on that. Our first goal was to get members to have a footprint, a greater footprint, and I think we've achieved that. Now we want to see them have more activity in the region, and that's been happening as we expand the number of counties.
Is that sort of a good news and a little bit of bad news? Good news that, hey, you're branched outside of the state, but you still want to do work and good business within your own region.
And we'll ask our members, well, what's the business climate like? And they'll say, oh, well, it's okay, but I got a major contract in Maryland, or I'm doing business in Ohio. Well, what about Western Pennsylvania? So what we try and do is share that as we advocate with corporations the situation for our members and why they should increase the number of companies that they do business with that are on a smaller scale.
Right. You mentioned the wide territory that the chamber covers all the way over to Cambria County, north to Erie County, to the Ohio border. I guess somewhere around 24 counties, if I could estimate.
But our core value is, our core nucleus is in the 12-county area.
So how does maybe helping a business in a more rural area differ from the city, the urban area of Pittsburgh?
I'm glad you asked that. In the urban areas, you get more of the major industries. So you get the professionals, the consultants, the marketing people. When you go outside of the urban core and you go into areas like Meadville and other areas, you get more of the consulting businesses or those that have small manufacturing companies that just want to be able to maintain the growth that they have.
Mm-hmm. So you work with hundreds of business owners, professionals. The businesses, what size are we talking about, whether it's in terms of revenues or employees? Give us an idea.
Well, we used to track them by less than three employees all the way up. We learned our lesson about that, and we track it by revenue size.
Okay.
So we have members that can be as small as 50,000 in net revenue that go up to 12 to 15 million on an average size. Obviously, we have some members that are much larger than that. We have members that actually help to build Heinz Field,
PNC Park.
PNC Park, right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then played a major role in building the convention center. Those are well in the $200 to $300 million range.
Right.
So, but we have smaller businesses. But the good news is our larger members have learned to partner with some of our smaller firms so that they can bring them together.
Are you
not in a large scale?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
But it's starting to happen.
Yeah. So are you sort of like the conduit for that sort of interaction?
Yes. Yes. Because we want our members to do business with each other. We want them to understand that competition is healthy, but we want them to do more business where they can help grow smaller businesses to their size and above.
How can this region, its leaders, elected leaders, do more to promote equity in opportunity and advancement? And what do you mean by equity?
Well, we're working on that, and we do that through our corporate engagement. We have a number of corporate sponsors, and I'm pleased to say that Morgan O'Brien, the chairman of People's Gas, is the chair of our presidential roundtable, something that Tom Usher started back in the year 2000 when we first started. He helps to galvanize the support of corporations to recognize that small business owners need your support as well. So it's on a tiered level. You've got the level of the corporations with Allegheny Conference, where they get the same message that the other chambers get from me about engaging small businesses. So when they have their events, our members are invited to attend.
Mm-hmm.
We bring them into our fold. We ask them to do how to do business workshops. They do a number of those. So we have that every month.
What would you say is the biggest challenge for small businesses, no matter who owns the businesses in our region?
Access to capital still remains a challenge for small business owners. And one of the things that our chamber works diligently at is making sure that small business owners are prepared to go to financial institutions for lending. There are a number of secondary lending organizations out there that charge a higher rate, but to go mainstream into a financial institution, you have to be prepared. You have to have good financial statements. You have to have your taxes up to date. A number of things that small business owners may have part of, we encourage them to have the total package so they can go into a financial institution and get a loan. Easier said than done, but we work at it.
Whether it is investment capital in the small businesses or lack of or failure to obtain or some other thing, is there a success rate or failure rate that's different from African-American-owned businesses to other, so white-owned businesses, would you say?
I would say that there is not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of what is publicized most.
Aha.
Small
attention.
Business, that's right. Well, listen, it takes the first 5 years is when most small businesses fail. So you have to look at how many new business starts do you get in that first 5 years as to whether they're successful or not. Minority business owners, and there are a much larger number now out there. There are those out there that we are trying to attract. So we have to create a level playing field for them to understand the value of being part of an organized body, what it does for them, and accept the introductions that corporations will make to them on how to do business with them. So they have to be prepared.
Allegheny County has a goal regarding who gets awarded county business, county contracts. 15%, they say, should go, at least 15% should go to women or minority-owned businesses. Is that a reasonable share?
It depends on who you talk to. A reasonable for maybe elected officials, it's not reasonable to me. It shouldn't have to be so much about the percentage of business. It's about the qualified business owners that you have doing business within our region that can help grow other businesses into that network. Listen, we've dealt with quotas over the years. We've dealt with these numbers and statistics. They don't mean anything unless you're able to show that you've got businesses that have moved to the next level and can actually bring other firms in. It doesn't matter.
We have just a couple minutes left. So how does your chamber work with government leaders to let them know, hey, we have all these wonderful businesses, don't forget about us?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned government. Government is only one segment that we want them to focus on. And don't spend so much time there unless you've got lots and lots of money, which most small business owners don't have. We have our elected officials come and address us. For example, our county executive will be the speaker this month for our power breakfast. We have one every third Friday of the month. The mayor, Bill Peduto, will be our speaker later on in this first quarter. We invite our elected officials to come in. We're bringing in Congressman Mike Doyle. He'll talk about what he's doing in energy. So we try and engage everyone that has resources that can impact small business owners to become part of our network and share.
In a sentence or two, we're out of time. Are those breakfasts open to prospective entrepreneurs?
They're open to everyone. It's at 7:30 in the morning at the Rivers Club, third Friday of every month.
And what are you most excited about for 2019 regarding the chamber and your members?
I'm most excited about the total engagement and moving members now to the next level.
Doris Carson Williams is the president and CEO of the African American Chamber of Commerce of Western Pennsylvania. Doris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Megan Harris. The Confluence airs live from 9 to 10 a.m., but the news never stops. Find more stories, conversations, and more on our website at wesa.fm/confluence, on Twitter at WESAConfluence, and wherever you get your podcasts. The Confluence continues next on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Katie Blackley with the Pittsburgh Almanac. This week in history, journalist Ida Tarbell dies at 86 years old in 1944. Tarbell was born in Erie County and moved to Western Pennsylvania to follow her father's career in the oil industry. She graduated at the head of her class in Titusville and studied biology at Allegheny College. She was the only woman in her class. She went on to write for a number of American newspapers and is considered one of the most significant muckrakers of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. That's today's Pittsburgh Almanac.
WESA celebrates 90 neighborhoods, 90 good stories, made possible with support from UPMC, life-changing medicine.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today we meet the creator of a book club conceived out of a need to organize literacy programming in the community. The Young Dreamers Book Club brings families together to fellowship over books while teaching young people that reading is a key to accessing their dreams. 90.5 WESA's Brian Cook reports.
Reading is just not a tool to help develop your dream, but reading is a tool to make the world a better place.
Dr. Noshikari Griffin L., founder of the Young Dreamers Book Club, is an advocate of literacy, especially among urban youth. His organization challenges young people to strive for greatness while learning. A Philadelphia native, Dr. Griffinell attended the University of Pittsburgh, started a family, and stayed in the area. He says the catalyst for the club stems from a personal experience in 2017.
My oldest son had a speech delay, and my wife and I were extremely dissatisfied with the support that the public school system in Pittsburgh was offering him. So one summer I told my wife, I said, I have an idea. I'm going to keep the boys home for the entire summer, and I'm just going to read to them.
From that, he noticed a greater issue of low literacy rates that needed to be addressed and says both children and parents must work together to overcome that disparity.
64% of African-American children don't read at grade level from third to fifth grade. So this Young Dreamers Book Club was born out of the necessity to say, we need to make reading an integral part of our community fabric. So that means that kids need to see themselves as readers.
The club partners with the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, and programs are set up in large gatherings around the city, and activities are assigned to be completed at home.
It's just a great connection with our mission here at the library and supporting children and families.
Mary Beth Parks, Children's Services Coordinator, works in conjunction with all 19 Carnegie Library locations. She says the addition of the Young Dreamers Book Club has improved programming across the board and enhanced the library's mission.
He's contributed content, book lists. We're just very happy to work with him and have him support the work on different projects, such as Black History Month, Martin Luther King Day, bilingual story times. So he's bringing so many elements and components into the library that support the work that we do.
Dr. Griffinell, who spent 3 years as a professor in South Africa before returning to Pittsburgh, says literacy is the gateway to dreams and overall participation in the democratic process. He says it's the gateway to a wealth of knowledge that no one can eradicate.
Literacy provides us with the opportunity to develop the personal agency to satisfy our curiosity, while at the same time, reading provides us with the ability to speak in an in-depth manner about things that are important while talking about the essence that these things represent.
I'm Brian Cook, 90.5 WESA News.
Who's making a difference in your neighborhood? Share your suggestion for our series WESA Celebrates 90 Neighborhoods, 90 Good Stories at WESA.FM/90. Made possible with support from UPMC, life-changing medicine.
You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. There's an old saying, see the world, get an education. For some students in the Pittsburgh area, it might be more, see the world, get an experience that could shape your lives, your attitudes. Over the last 30 years, CISV Pittsburgh has provided more than 800 students the chance to participate in travel and education programs around the world. This year alone, that includes Israel, Denmark, Germany, Lithuania, Colombia, and Chile. Joining us in studio to discuss how these experiences can cultivate a greater understanding, tolerance, and acceptance are Amy Raslovich, PhD candidate at the Graduate School of Public Health at the University of Pittsburgh. She has served as chapter president and is a CISV parent of 16-year-old Laura Kelly, a junior at Pittsburgh Obama Academy of International Studies. And we're also joined in studio by another alum of the program, Diagon Kelly, no relation, a junior at the University of Pittsburgh majoring in Urban Studies and French. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. So I'll start with Amy. How did the CISV concept get started and by whom?
Doris Allen was a child psychologist in Cincinnati, Ohio, and around the end of World War II, as things like UNESCO began forming, her idea was that children were the ones that were going to build the future of peace. Her studies and her belief were that 11-year-olds were old enough to go to summer camp, but still young enough that their prejudices hadn't developed yet. So in 1951, she brought together kids from around the world, including Germany, Italy, Sweden, the U.S., and some other nations. They came to Cincinnati, and they spent the summer together with the hope of their friendships being the underpinning of the future of peace. And it's continued ever since. It's now in 70 countries, 200-plus chapters worldwide, 26 chapters in the U.S., and Pittsburgh's fortunate enough to have had one for the past 30 years.
So the first one, children from our, quote, former enemies, end quote.
Yes. So an incredible leap of faith by their parents and families to send their children so shortly after that war had happened, with the belief that we had more in common than we do differences, and that we need to look to live together in a world that's ever interconnected.
You might have already answered or alluded to this. So what was the goal then in 1951, and has the goal changed through the years?
I don't know that the goal has changed, because I believe that the idea of children forming these friendships that are lasting has continued, but I think it's become more sophisticated and more developed. CISV now focuses on four educational principles that rotate. So sustainable development has become more important, diversity, human rights, and this year's theme, 2019's theme of conflict and resolution. So these themes have never really changed, although I think that the emphasis have changed as the world has developed and as the kids have become actually much more sophisticated in what they understand and how they participate.
All right. Well, let's bring in two alums. So the idea is to learn. Amy talked about some of the themes, certain principles. Is there one that really caught your attention, you know, of those four principles? Dakin, we'll start with you.
I think sustainable development is the one that really drove me to like continue my education inside and outside of the program, because sustainable development refers to like the environmental crisis we're facing, but also like how do we sustainably develop our cities? How do we sustainably develop like populations and environments for our children and create like a better and brighter future? And it's one of those really intersectional topics that made me very curious into how like CISV can continue to work on this program internationally, and how like we can take that education from CISV as alums and as members of the program and like bring it into our lives.
All right. Sustainable development for Diagon. What about you, Laura?
I think human rights, just because I think there's so much that can fit underneath that general topic, and also conflict and resolution, because not only are we doing activities like that at the camps or the programs that we're participating in, I think it also just comes naturally when you're working with new people from different cultures and different backgrounds. You have to naturally learn how to communicate and how to basically live with somebody for a month's time or however long the program is. So
that's what I'm going to ask about, the lengths of these programs. There are different programs. Mm-hmm. But why is it important to have an extended period of time, Amy?
I think because when you are sort of flying in, flying out, you never really get to understand somebody. You don't get to the point of that conflict, that you're sharing the shower, that, you know, it's time to go to sleep and let's all be quiet, that you have to learn to communicate with people where English is not their first language. Learning and actually developing a deeper friendship, I think, is harder to do when it's a shorter program. I think after a month, you've worked together, you've lived together, you experience highs and lows, good and bad. And I mean, you girls have come back with some great stories that, mm-hmm. you know, as a parent, I'm impressed with what they've faced and how they've handled them.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that the longer programs allow for those deeper friendships to form and for the camp to actually get into deeper topics, to really discuss like problems between countries and problems between like students or their families and like what they faced, and to like really get into the personal conflict that brings us there, and also like how our backgrounds shape us and how we're all shaped similarly.
You're in such an enclosed space, and you're having such private interactions with these people for a month or for 3 weeks, and you're also dealing with these big problems that are faced in your own country, learning about problems that are faced in different countries. And I think that you really do see another side to people, because you're dealing with such heavy topics, and you're also sharing meals and sharing the bathroom. And so I've developed some of the most strong connections in only a month's time, as opposed to people I've known for years and years.
And I think that length of time allows itself to both the heavy topics and the light ones. I mean, I'm always fascinated by, what do you eat for breakfast? Why do you tie your shoes that way? Why do you, wear that to bed? Because we take so much of how we live as shorthand and as sort of an assumption that everyone does it that way. And by living together, you realize that it's not that way. It's not the way that we just assume that life is to be, and understanding and seeing there are different ways that may be better or maybe worse, and having that opportunity to grow.
Dagan and Laura, you've been to what countries?
I've been to France as a junior counselor for a program for 11-year-olds, and I went to Belgium for a step-up, a camp for 14-year-olds.
All right, Laura?
I was in Reggio Emilia, Italy for a month for a village program when I was 11. When I was 12, I did an exchange program in Norway. So I was there for 2 weeks, and I had a girl named Mia stay with me for 2 weeks. And then I also did a step-up program when I was 14 in the Netherlands for 3 weeks.
All right. We want to get to the specifics and the differences of the village program, the step-up program. But so you're just talking about the countries you visited, but you experienced students from around the world from how many other countries?
Yes.
Give us a sense of that.
I think there are at least 9 to 14 different delegations from different countries at every camp. At my step up in Belgium, I think 10 countries are represented. And at my camp in France, I think there are 12 total countries represented.
I think both of my camps had around 14, and it's really awesome because you are experiencing a new country, but you're also having delegation nights in village where each of the delegations get to showcase their country, and they get to perform a dance or share a food. And then in Step Up, we were writing and taking charge of our own activities as opposed to having them written for us. And so they got to write an activity that sort of pertained to their own country and to share sort of a conflict there. And we got to learn so much from that.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation about CISV and Pittsburgh and around the world when the Confluence continues on 90.5 WESA. It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. We're continuing our conversation about CISV Pittsburgh, about the educational, travel, cultural opportunities for students in the Pittsburgh area. So we mentioned before the break, village program, step-up program. Give us a sense of, so that's for the youngest, is the village program. Briefly, what's that about?
So Village is for 11-year-olds. That's been the flagship program that started at the beginning. And as 11-year-olds, they travel. Usually it's 2 boys and 2 girls and an adult leader go to wherever the camp location is, generally 12 to 14 different delegations, as well as staff members and junior counselors from other countries around the world, generally 5 to 7, I believe. The program is 4 weeks, and it's directed by the junior counselors and the staff members. As the students get older, they start to take more leadership responsibility. We have an interesting program for 12 and 13-year-olds, which is an interchange. It's more of a family program where you host a student that's paired with your child, and then your child goes and lives. Like Laura had lived in a fishing village off the coast of Norway with a family for 2 weeks, and we hosted their daughter here.
At the same time or
back to back, so okay. They stay together. At 14, the step-up program is slightly shorter, but the 14-year-olds take more responsibility for planning their activities and for directing their discussions. And as it progresses, then the students, by the time they're 16, 17, travel as individuals, and they're more thematic camps, sometimes 8 to 15 days. So they develop leadership skills as they go along with these other global experiences.
All right, Laura, you were 11 your first trip
yes,
in the village
I was.
Program. Mom is over here. Which of the two of you was more nervous, terrified? You fill in the blank.
Definitely my mom.
Yeah,
my
parents. Me. It was me.
I've always been pretty social. So as soon as I walked in to the camp, I was just completely overwhelmed and just so excited because it really is just sensory overload when you see all these different people from all around the world. And we were playing cards together, and we're staying at a elementary school, so we're all playing in the playground together, and it's just so much fun.
Again, your parents aren't here to contradict so we'll just take your word for it. Who was more terrified?
Oh, definitely my parents. I was 14. I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. This will be great. And
bye.
Bye. Yeah. I came back in 3 weeks. It was all good.
Well, yes. But when they came back, they were sad. I mean, they didn't want to. None of them. No. My son did the same. They did not want to come back. They were upset for weeks.
For weeks, yeah.
And for us, I mean, it is a leap of faith. You're allowing your child to travel across, you know, often across an ocean for a month, and you have little to no communication.
Little to no, and
the word is, there's no phones at camp. No good. No news is good news. They're busy, yeah. And it was because a lot of the times when the kids would communicate back home, they would get homesick. So, we do as much as we can as adults to prepare with safety and background checks. And in the U.S., we have a whole a very strict system, and different countries have different methods, but. You know, we had an experience where my son traveled to Germany and was waylaid in Iceland for 24 hours as an 11-year-old with his group. And I emailed a group, the CISV group in Iceland, and the families picked them up at the airport and hosted them at their house overnight because it's a worldwide family. I mean, everybody.
Mm-hmm. The hosting culture is very strong in CISV, mm-hmm. and I absolutely feel safe traveling anywhere knowing that there's like a CISV family that I can turn to if I need help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doug and Laura, you both have taken part in the Step Up, the leadership program,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
What is that? How is that different from your earlier experiences with?
Step Up was such an incredible experience for me just because when I was leaving, the United States was in a really tense time. I left in the summer of 2016. And so I was scared to leave and I was scared to come back. But you have kids that are going and they're very like-minded and they have these goals, these CISV ideas in mind. And the people that I met were so educated about their own countries and the political conflicts. And it was just so incredible to see just people that were so anxious to make the world a better place, and so many common experiences that I shared with them when I felt so much in a bubble here.
Mm-hmm. Dagan, at 14, 15, 16, are you even thinking about leadership skills?
Absolutely. When I was a 16-year-old, I got to be a junior counselor at a village camp for 11-year-olds, and that was like one of the best experiences of my adolescence. Like 5 years later, all of the kids that I was a junior counselor to, like their big sister, they're now old enough to be JCs, as they're called, and they're contacting me from around the world for advice on their applications. I loved it. It was amazing. And both the programs I did when I was a teenager really allowed me to kind of like step out of my own, step out of like my own environment, and like really just be like an autonomous, like my own person for one of the first times in my life and without my family and just like on my own doing my thing.
Yeah.
Amy, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. It seems like working on leadership skills, the idea is not just about fun. Yes, you want to have fun. You want to get a cultural experience, but also seems like applying what the students have learned.
Yeah, the idea with CISV, it's not as if we're going to sit down and we're going to have leadership skill development. I think that the activities themselves lend themselves to the kids taking responsibility, from everything to planning their schedule for the day to who's going to be cleaning up to who plans an activity. A big part of CISV activities are called debriefs. So they sit and they talk through what the activity is, what it meant, what went well, what didn't go well. And then what the chapters themselves do is we meet monthly back in Pittsburgh, and we apply these things to various community service projects, social service projects, and it's fascinating and very gratifying to me to see these kids then take responsibility in different leadership in their schools, in their communities. They're all doing amazing things, and I don't think they realize how amazing they are because they've had such a unique experience at such a young age. Experiences that I wouldn't have had until I was in my 30s, probably.
I mean, I went to Step Up when I was 14. I'd already been in CISV for 4 years, and I just got such an appreciation for the work that goes into making these activities, because you have to have this big idea in mind to be able to condense that down into an hour and then sort of cultivate this discussion to sort of really break the surface of these big things that we're talking about is really difficult.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Especially with having to make these activities with a language barrier and to work with people that you've never met before, to effectively communicate and utilize people's skills and their strengths is something that I will take with me forever. And also this incredible perspective that you gain from just having to interact so closely with people from different countries.
And realizing that your perspective isn't the only one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And everything with CISV, too, like all of the lessons are hidden, basically, in games. Mm-hmm. And then all of the activities or the games that we do that facilitate these skills are following a very strict educational model. And the debriefs also follow, like, a model based on psychological research and grounded very well in fact and research and educational models that are proven to work.
And, Amy, I want to briefly get to the fact that you alluded to there is a sharing. You are hosting. That's part of the arrangement
right.
with the international program.
Right. In order for us to send students abroad or to other programs, we have to, as a chapter, host students here. So, for example, we've hosted some step-ups in the past few years. We've hosted villages. We were privileged, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, we hosted the very first Chinese delegation that had gone to any program. We've hosted from Indonesia. It's just amazing. And we also have in-home hosting opportunities as well for families that want to take somebody for a weekend. So it's an awesome chance for your kids and for yourself to get to connect to the world.
Yeah. Well, before we go, how would you say these experiences are shaping your understanding of other peoples, their cultures?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I'd be doing the majors or the work I'm doing today without CISV. I'm very interested in student activism and political work, and I don't think I would have gotten there as quickly in college as I have with CISV.
I feel so privileged to have CISV because it really gave me something to be passionate about and something to care about, and I do feel like I'm way ahead of my other classmates in choosing my career path and choosing the school that I want to go to because it's given me such a unique perspective. And it's just something that I feel I can enjoy, but also is really important and is needed in the world.
All right. So choosing a career path. But how might this make you a better citizen, a better person?
It's connected me to the news in a different way. So I'm hearing about conflicts in other countries, and not only do I understand them better because I have personal context, but I also am building off the knowledge my friends gave me, and I understand the perspectives of my friends who are from these places.
It's just given me this ability to think outside of myself, and I think
Absolutely.
It's made me so much more open-minded because I mean, I'm having these friendships with people and not just hearing about countries in my history class or on the news, and just making these connections and considering things from a point of view that I never would have before has, I think, just opened me up to so many different possibilities and ways of thinking.
And I think that that's both international and local. I've observed that most of the CISV students look at their communities in a much different way. They have responsibilities to one another that I think a lot of students haven't grasped yet.
Absolutely.
Well, so people have been listening about CISV. Amy, there are a lot of programs going on this year. How can people find out more information?
If they go to pitt.cisvusa.org, there's lots of information. And we're actually having a meet and greet next Sunday, the 13th from 5 to 7. And they can find the information there and ask questions and come and meet some of the students and learn more.
Well, will you two be there?
Yes.
Really excited
come
to talk to people.
Our local events, please. It's so much fun.
In a sentence, what piece of advice would you give somebody considering?
Do it. Go for it. Come ask questions. It'll change your life.
Very good. Daigan, thank you so much. Daigan Kelly is a junior at the University of Pittsburgh and alum of CISV. 16-year-old Laura Kelly is a junior at Pittsburgh Obama Academy in
thank
International
you so much.
Studies. And also Amy Russelvich is a PhD candidate to the Graduate School of Public Health at the University of Pittsburgh, and she has served as chapter president. Thanks to all of you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Appreciate it.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, a conversation with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik about a roller coaster year for the media, from attacks by the president to covering the Me Too movement, including scandals within media organizations. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski, production assistance by Meg Fair. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.